In truth, I'm not sure if it was initially harder watching people falling ill and too often dying of COVID, having no clue if we could accomplish the unimaginable, that is, creating a vaccine even as the pandemic still raged, or 9 months in, waiting our turn for the vaccines, while facing the fear that not enough Americans will allow themselves to be vaccinated. And while this commentator has long been one of Trump's biggest detractors, his record on the pandemic is more nuanced than some accept. His administration deserves a lot of credit for helping orchestrate the global effort to come up with a vaccine in historically record time, even as Trump himself deserves full condemnation for not following through with a massive effort to encourage the wearing of masks, one of the few effective tools we had against the pandemic from the get-go. Rather, the idiot actively encouraged in an insane act of misguided identity patriotism, not wearing them. But now our challenges are evolving. First, the logistical nightmare of a global rollout of the new vaccines, to the larger question of whether enough Americans will get the vaccine to make a real difference, given how many people have fallen under the anti-scientific garbage spewed out by the anti-vaccine propaganda mill in recent years. But we can only go so far with blaming the rumor-mongering anti-vaxxers. After all, from the first days of the science of vaccinations, generations ago, people have understandably found the entire idea of healthy people exposing themselves to a deadly pathogen to avoid catching the disease it causes questionable at best. Indeed, it has always sounded counterintuitive. In truth, like a lot of science. I mean, it really does look like the sun goes around the earth, but I digress. No, frankly, I believe the real blame lies at the feet of my own colleagues in the historical profession, that is, those who study and teach history. History, after all, begins with the questions we ask of the past. And those questions change over time. Sure, earlier generations of historians tended to focus almost exclusively on the efforts of important men, or followed educational mandates that insisted we produce nationally minded, patriotic citizens. While these days, the experiences of the masses of previously neglected groups, from women to minorities, more often dominate the gaze of younger historians. Nevertheless, it has become increasingly obvious that we historians have been derelict in our duty to constantly reevaluate what the public needs to know of the past. Indeed, have forgotten that despite all the challenges of contemporary life, most of today's adults have in large measure managed to avoid one of the worst elements of the human experience, the constancy of horrific pandemic diseases from cholera and smallpox to diphtheria that have been the scourge of humanity. Indeed, while today's seniors spent their childhood in terror of polio, and later practically worship Doctors Salk and Sabin, who created the first vaccines, while those in middle age never knew when the dreaded HIV virus might strike them down, most of today's parents came of age free of the fears that have darkened the hearts of grieving parents throughout history, leaving an entire generation vulnerable to the charlatans who denigrate vaccines, easily one of the greatest human accomplishments. Thus, this condemnation of the historical profession that too often failed to compensate for those forgotten memories by integrating the history of medicine into our courses. And yes, doing so can be a challenge. It is, after all, often a story of professionalized torture, sprinkled with horrific images of what infections looked like before antibiotics or the ravages of smallpox before vaccines. But such knowledge must be part of the curriculum. Indeed, better knowledge of the history of medicine is in itself an intellectual vaccine, helping our students and the general public develop life-saving intellectual antibodies to protect themselves from those who undermine life-affirming tools like vaccines.